payments to an IRS lockbox was involved in an accident on a San Francisco bridge. 30,000 tax payments blew into San Francisco Bay. The IRS has now decided to waive the penalties for those whose payments were lost because of the IRS crash. Dennis Martin reporting, USA Radio Network News.
They were charged with finding an all-water route to the Pacific, yet less than half of them knew how to swim. They nearly starved, ran out of supplies, and failed in their primary mission. So why 200 years later do Lewis and Clark still fascinate us? Maybe it's because it was a military expedition notable for battles that didn't happen. Or because the Indians they met gave them food, horses, and guidance. Maybe it's the teenage mother and the slave who were allowed to speak their minds. Or was it because they chronicled a breathtaking and abundant American landscape? For 3 years, Lewis and Clark traveled a trail of tolerance, enlightenment, and adventure that we'd soon find out was too good to be true. It's a trail that still winds through us all. What can we learn from a 200-year-old story? Walk with Lewis and Clark at lewisandclark200.org and see what you discover.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ad Council.
Thank you for listening to the TalkStar Radio Network. For the finest and informative and interactive talk radio programming, it's the TalkStar Radio Network, available live via your local radio station and on the Internet at TalkStarRadio.com. Your feedback is important to us. Email us at TalkStarRadio.com.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Today is Tuesday. Every Tuesday on the Scoop, I like to debate someone with views quite different from my own. And, in fact, all this week, I am debating someone with views different from my own. So it's the heart, the debate Tuesday of debate week here on the Inside Scoop. And so I thought I would discuss what is, I guess, the biggest issue of our time, the war on Iraq. And my guest today, a man by the name of Fred Giedrich, has a very long resume, a resume that would suggest, well, quite a lot of things that are very different from my views. I, of course, worked for the Congressional Democrats. Fred Giedrich worked for the State and Defense Departments under Republican administrations. He's a former senior policy analyst at the Freedom Alliance and the Coalition for Tax Competition. Giedrich is currently a member of the Center for Security Policy Working Group, the Coalition for Security, Liberty, and the Law, the Missile Defense Coalition, the Stanton Group, and a regular at weekly Americans for Tax Reform meetings. He's currently the executive vice president of MobileVox, Inc., a defense wireless technology contractor. His resume, as I said, could not be more different from my own. And I have to say, Fred Giedrich, when we discuss the war in Iraq, I think there are three kinds of people who support the war in Iraq. I would say there are the liars, the fools, and the true believers. And I'm going to lay out my case for why I think Fred Giedrich is the most dangerous kind of all. That is a true believer. So, Fred, first of all, I want to welcome you to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, I'm pleased to be able to join you this evening.
And I'm pleased to have you, and I hope you'll be patient with me as I lay out my view of the war in Iraq, and then I promise I will give you ample time to respond, because I'm really curious to hear how you support some of this stuff. So let me go through it.
Correct my bio real quick?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
I served during the Clinton administration as well.
Oh, you did? Okay, fair enough. You served in the Clinton administration
right.
As well. Thank you for correcting that. I appreciate that. Let me go through it. As I see it, there are three supporters of the war in Iraq. They're the liars, the fools, and the true believers. The liars, I would put the people like Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, George W. Bush, the people who told us that if we didn't act right now, we could face a nuclear bomb, a mushroom cloud, as Condoleezza Rice put it, from Iraq. People who knew, in fact, that there was no basis to support these views. And in fact, as the Downing memo put it, we're fixing facts and intelligence around the policy. Then I would say the second category is the fools. The people, largely including many congressional Democrats, who supported the war in Iraq originally, who were tricked by the administration lies, and now come to understand that they made a big error. I would include in that category honorable people like Colin Powell, who has talked recently about how much he regretted his speech in front of the United Nations, where he told a lot of untruths about weapons of mass destruction. I'm convinced that Colin Powell didn't do this purposely, but that he was tricked. And I have to say, I include me in the fool category. I myself never believed that our president would not treat force as a last resort. Back when we voted for that resolution, many congressional people, he said that force would be a last resort. I never, in my wildest dreams, believed that he would send inspectors into Iraq, they would be allowed everywhere, they would find nothing, and the president would go to war. And so I count myself in the fool category. But to me, the worst and most dangerous, and I, of course, I don't mean to attack Fred personally. I'm attacking his views, not him. But the most dangerous are the true believers. And those are people who actually think, even today, even with all the evidence before us, that the war in Iraq is still a good idea. They would have to believe, as far as I'm concerned, and like I said, I will give Fred ample opportunity to respond, they'd have to believe that Iraq, under Saddam Hussein, was 10 times more dangerous than Al-Qaeda, under Osama bin Laden, and therefore worthy of spending 10 times the troops in Iraq. They'd have to believe that the nuclear threats from North Korea and Iran were less dangerous to the United States than Saddam Hussein in Iraq. They'd have to believe that the humanitarian concerns in Iraq were more severe than the genocide in Sudan or the child armies of Liberia. They would have to believe that transforming the Iraqi state from a stable, if awful, dictatorship to Afghani-like anarchy and terrorism actually makes the United States safer. They would have to believe that it's more important to spend hundreds of billions in Iraq than hundreds of millions to fix levees in New Orleans. They'd have to believe that our overstretched military, which is so overstretched now that we have recruitment problems, that the National Guard is falling apart, is worth it, even though we're not fighting some pretty strong enemies, like capturing Al-Qaeda and so forth. They'd have to believe in the administration saying we'd be greeted like liberators, that not providing our troops with body armor and vehicles was a good idea, and in essence that the thousands of Americans' lives lost, tens of thousands of Iraqi lives, and the horrible numbers of wounded and hundreds of billions of dollars is all worth it for some lofty cause. I don't understand that belief, but after break, I'm going to give Fred Giedrich an equal opportunity. I will shut up and let him explain his views, how it is, if he accepts what I accuse him to be, actually being a true believer, someone who isn't lying. I understand those people. Yeah, people lie to get what they want. Isn't a fool. I understand people who used to believe the administration but don't now, but still believes that the war in Iraq is in America's best interest. I'd like to know why. I'm sure you would, too. The toll-free number is 877-528-TALK. We'll be right back with Fred Giedrich's responses to my charges right after this.
Do you know what women want? If you're losing your hair, here are two things guaranteed to turn them off: a toupee or that hairspray comb-over look. But you hate your hair loss and you want it to change. That's where the new interactive and absolutely free DVD from Medical Hair Restoration can help. Various gurus for hair loss, flood radio and TV airwaves. But the first question to consider is what has been scientifically and medically proven. Founded by Dr. Matt Levitt, Medical Hair Restoration has specialized in hair loss for over 11 years. With literally thousands of satisfied patients, you deserve to get your copy of their free DVD and find out the answers to your questions about restoring your hair to its natural, attractive condition. See the amazing before and after pictures of people who have gotten their real hair, self-esteem, and confidence back. Call to order your free DVD now. There is no obligation, just real results. You know what women want? To run their fingers through your real hair. Call 800-936-2823, 800-936-2823 for an amazing free DVD. Call now, 800-936-2823.
Dear Mama, my first 5 years, I'll learn a lot.
How to walk, talk,
brush my teeth.
But for food, I'm pretty much counting on you.
I don't know what's good for me.
I can't use the stove, drive to the store. It's up to you.
So if you need help, there's WIC.
quick. Women, infants, children.
They'll tell you what's good for me, even provide food. Because what I eat my first 5 years will affect me the rest of my life.
Love always.
Your child.
Get proper nutrition before it's too late. Call or visit WIC. WIC provides nutrition information, healthcare referrals, even food. For women, infants, children. To find out more about WIC, our nearest location, or if you qualify for our benefits, call 1-866-WIC-INFO.
P.S. It doesn't cost anything.
Your child has you, and you have WIC. Brought to you by the National WIC Association and the Ag Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Today is Debate Tuesday. My guest is Fred Giedrich. And before the break, I laid out an extensive list of charges on the war of Iraq. I said they're liars, fools, and true believers. I described each, and I promised, as promised, I will give Fred Giedrich ample opportunity to respond. Fred Giedrich, I accuse you of being a true believer. How do you plead?
Oh, gee, I plead as an American, and I think what we need to do is put things in perspective, and certainly we want to have an honest debate, and we want to lay all the facts on the table. I'd like to start out by chronicling some of the things Saddam Hussein did during his tyrannical rule. He carried out heinous human rights abuses. I don't think anybody would challenge that. He invaded Iran and Kuwait. He fired 39 Scud missiles at Israeli civilians. He used mustard and nerve gas against Iranians and Kurds in contravention of the Geneva Protocol. He committed environmental terrorism by flooding the Persian Gulf with millions of gallons of oil and setting Kuwaiti oil refineries on fire. He encouraged Palestinian terrorism by sending $30 million to the families of suicide bombers who killed, maimed, and wounded innocent civilians. And he refused since 1991 to comply with 11 UN Security Council resolutions requiring the elimination of biological, chemical, and nuclear development program and long-range missile delivery systems. With that information in hand, two things happened before we intervened in Iraq with a coalition of the willing that 30-plus nations strong. We passed a resolution, and the critics of the administration are quick to point out just the part about where the biological and chemical weapons are, but certainly I guess everyone has to concede that he did actually use them against the Iranians and the Kurds. The fact that we can't find them is important because it really shows glaring weaknesses in our intelligence, and we had worldwide intelligence network, other countries throughout the world who believed he had weapons of mass destruction. Now, I want to read verbatim from the resolution of October 10, 2002 that was passed by three-quarters of the U.S. Senate and two-thirds of the U.S. House of Representatives, and it says in part, I'm reading the part dealing with what he was accused of. Whereas Iraq both poses a continuing threat to the national security of the United States and international peace and security in the Persian Gulf region and remains in material and unacceptable breach of its international obligations by, among other things, continuing to possess and develop a significant chemical and biological weapons capability, actively seeking nuclear weapons capability, and supporting and harboring terrorist organizations, whereas Iraq persists in violating resolutions of the United Nations Security Council by continuing to engage in brutal repression of its civilian population, thereby threatening international peace and security in the region by refusing to release, repatriate, and account for non-Iraqi citizens wrongfully detained by Iraq, including an American serviceman, and by failing to properly returning wrongfully seized by Iraq from Kuwait. Now, what we were dealing with is certainly a man who had posed trouble not only for the people of Iraq, but the region and the world. He was a world menace, and I think his crimes against humanity will be laid out when his trial begins in October. The world will be shocked at the breadth and scope of what he did. Now, the real issue here is Iraq a better place today, and is the world safer for what the United States has done in leading a coalition of willing in Iraq? I would say that time will tell, and certainly our heart goes out to those, both the coalition forces and Americans who have sacrificed so much. 1,900 Americans killed in Iraq, 14,000 plus wounded. When one goes over the Walter Reed Army Hospital, your heart breaks when you see what happens with the improvised explosive devices.
But Fred, it was all worth it, right? I mean, the people, they didn't die in vain. Their lives were lost for a good reason, right? I mean, you view their lives lost.
No, to
depose Saddam Hussein and to occupy Iraq.
They lost their life. But the real issue here is, after 9/11, did the world change? That's the question we have to ask ourselves.
Let's start with...
I see it broken down into two main categories.
Right.
Those who believe that the Clinton-Gore policies made us safe in fighting terrorism, and those who felt as though something had to be changed, that we had to develop a preemptive policy.
Yeah, we had to attack countries that never attacked us.
Lawless enemies of mankind,
yeah,
who play by no rules.
Right. Right. Should we attack them all?
Pardon me?
Should we attack them all? Sudan, Liberia, Algeria, Morocco, Saudi Arabia, Iran, North Korea, China, Burma, Liberia. There are at least 20 other countries, 30 other countries, maybe even 50, with these brutal dictators. Should we invade them all? And in your view, should we draft people in order to do it?
No, and I think the strategy is well crafted in this sense. And certainly we can quarrel about how the post-war effort has gone after Saddam was deposed. But we really, really have to decide whether or not we needed to do something different. And I would argue this way. I would say that just chronicling, I wrote a paper several years ago on foreign terrorist attacks against the United States.
Okay, and if you explain about 30 seconds, we have to take a break.
Period,
go ahead.
You'd be just shocked, you know, culminating with September. I'm talking about assassinations of U.S. ambassadors.
I'm not sure what that has to do with Saddam Hussein, but
no,
we have to take
I'm
a break.
I'm up to a point here, and the point is this, is during the Clinton-Gore administrations, we had attacks on the World Trade Center, the first attack. That was
right. Saddam Hussein didn't do that, did he?
Issue. We had the Copar Tower.
Right. Saddam Hussein didn't do that either, did he?
But let me make my point.
Okay.
You got to recognize that we do have rogue states operating out.
Absolutely.
There.
I recognize that. Fred, we have to take a break, and I promise I will get back to this debate. We have the entire hour. If you want to join in, it's 877-528-8255, 877-528-TALK. As far as I'm concerned, there are dozens of rogue states around the world, dozens, in fact, that have chemical, biological programs, many that are far more dangerous than Saddam Hussein. And the question to me is this, not whether Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. I know he did awful things in 1991, many of the things that Fred Giedrich named, using Scud missiles and attacking Kurds and so forth. But in 1991, after he did these things, using chemical weapons supplied by Ronald Reagan under his government, as well as Russia and France and so forth, George Bush Sr. decided not to invade Saddam Hussein. The question is whether we should have invaded him 14 years later for crimes he committed 14 years ago, or should we have gone after someone I consider far more dangerous than Saddam Hussein by the name of Osama bin Laden. We'll get right back with this discussion of priorities right after these messages.
Tired of losing in the casinos and being in the hole? Learn how to win at Blackjack with Blackjack for Winners. Call 1-800-214-7012, 1-800-214-7012. This is the DVD the casinos do not want you to see. According to Tommy Hyland, a legendary blackjack professional, this DVD teaches an easy way to count cards and beat the casinos at their own game of blackjack. It takes only three easy steps. One, basic strategy. Two, card counting. And three, money management. It's just that easy to beat the casinos at their own game of blackjack. Order right now and you'll receive two instructional DVDs, 52 flashcards making basic strategy a snap, and a reference. into the casinos with you. All of this for only $29.95 plus shipping and handling. Order today at 1-800-214-7012. 1-800-214-7012. Start learning to win at Blackjack today with Blackjack for Winners. 1-800-214-7012. 1-800-214-7012.
Little Timmy Kelly's birth left him blind and with little chance of ever walking. Then his parents found help and hope at Shriners Hospitals for Children. Shriners combine expert orthopedic spinal cord and burn medical care with world-class research and teaching programs, and there's never a charge. Today, Timmy lives a full and active life. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
When you're weary.
In times of trouble, in times of crisis, the American Red Cross is there, providing shelter, a warm meal, a helping hand. Victims of disasters need your help now. Your support for the American Red Cross Disaster Relief Fund makes help possible. Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org today.
Over troubled water, I will lay me down.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest today is Fred Giedrich. He is someone who supports our action in Iraq. We're having a debate. If you want to join in, the toll-free number is 877-528-TALK. Fred, here's my problem. Whenever I debate a neoconservative or someone who supports the war in Iraq, it seems to me they set up a straw man. They pretend that people who oppose the war, or certainly that I, somehow don't believe that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. Somehow don't believe that he did some awful human rights abuses. I concede absolutely no question that Saddam Hussein's a bad guy, that he's done human rights abuses, that rival countries like Algeria, Liberia, Saudi Arabia, it's not quite as bad as Sudan or North Korea in my view, but he's done some really awful things. And to me the question is this, not, as you asked before the break, I concede that there are rogue states out there. Of course I concede there are rogue states. To me it's a question of priorities. Should we invade all 50 rogue states in the United States, in which case we're going to need a very massive draft, you'd have to agree, or should we concentrate on those who are most dangerous to the United States? People like, as far as I'm concerned, Osama bin Laden. People like, as far as I'm concerned, Kim Jong-il of North Korea, rather than wasting time on a two-bit dictator who, frankly, was far weaker in 2002 than he was in 1991 when he invaded Kuwait. How do you address the question of priorities?
Well, I would present it this way, and I don't go along with labels, and I do not consider myself a neocon, by the way.
Okay.
But I do have a big place in my heart for the United States of America.
And as do I, sir. Absolutely.
I certainly haven't had the opportunity to travel around the globe extensively as a member of the U.S. Department of State. I got to see what the world is like, and it's not 50 rogue states in the world. There's a lot of bad ones. But if you have a chance, look at the State Department's global patterns of global terrorism. And before we intervened in Iraq and went in militarily, they had listed seven countries as state sponsors of terror.
Syria.
And if one looks at the terrorist attacks against the United States, there's one area of the world that sticks out.
Yeah,
Tell me this.
How many attacks did Saddam Hussein cause against the United States? How many Americans were killed in the United States by Saddam Hussein?
Well, I remember during the Iraq-Iran war, the latter stages,
right.
And you probably remember too the USS Stark when the missile was fired in and killed 37.
Right, 15 years ago in the middle of a war, Iraq. I don't think you believe that they intentionally shot it down.
But the issue is this: if one supports the Bush doctrine, which is not only the perpetrators of terrorism, but the nations that harbor them, then certainly you you have to look first at the state sponsors of terror. And certainly when you go through the list of atrocities committed by Saddam Hussein and the problems he caused for the world, you would see that, you know, certainly one would conceivably identify him as a
suspect for removal.
I mean,
sure, I'm glad Saddam Hussein's gone. I, you know, there are lots of dictators I'd like to see gone. I could think of 75 countries or more that harbor terrorists, including, I have to say, Florida, which had all those terrorists that went to our flight schools, Germany. I mean, democratic countries who don't intentionally harbor terrorists, not to mention Libya and Syria and Algeria and North Korea and Burma and Liberia and Sudan, where they're massacring people as we speak. It just seems to me very strange that we take a guy who, yes, 15 years ago, and I supported the Gulf War, by the way, unlike some of my listeners, 15 years ago posed a much greater threat than he does today. I've always said that if you're in a burning building and you got a mosquito on your arm, leave the building first, and then you can whack at the mosquito. Don't we have priorities, maybe even the levees of New Orleans, that are more important than Iraq? And what did we achieve with the war in Iraq anyway? We'll be right back after these messages.
This is Newsbreak. Hurricane Rita has pounded the Florida Keys with maximum sustained winds of 100 miles an hour and heavy rain. The storm is also growing stronger. And forecasters say it will soon be a Category 3 major hurricane. Texas authorities have been meeting to decide when to evacuate areas in the projected path of the storm. The mayor of New Orleans says the city is making preparations in case it is struck even a glancing blow by Rita. President Bush was in New Orleans today getting a first-hand look at the recovery from Hurricane Katrina and the preparations to deal with Hurricane Rita. The death toll from Hurricane Katrina now stands at 973. On Wall Street today, the Dow dropped 76 points to 10,482. NASDAQ lost 14 to close at 2131. The S&P 500, 10 points lower at 1221. A link to a list of Hurricane Katrina relief resources and more news is at usaradio.com.
So you had the big meeting yesterday. The boss was cranky from 6 hours on the red eye. Dan left the presentation in the cab, and you sat on a 4-inch window ledge for 90 minutes.
Next time, web conference with Microsoft Office Live Meeting and have a more productive meeting without leaving your office. Present to clients around the globe, collaborate in real time, even get instant feedback by taking a live poll.
Try it free for 14 days at Microsoft.com/WorkLive. That's Microsoft.com/WorkLive or call 1-877-MEET-WEB today.
Last year, they called Lost TV's most gripping new series.
Blew the door to get everyone inside this thing so they'd be safe.
This year, prepare to get hooked even deeper.
What makes you think I even want to go in?
God, going in might be the only way out.
This Wednesday, the stranded survivors uncover one of the island's biggest secrets.
I think something's down here.
Lost.
You better see this.
The new season begins Wednesday, 9, 8 Central, only on BBC.
I'm Terry Graydon with our daily update from the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
A new study of the popular herb echinacea shows that this remedy does not prevent or relieve cold symptoms. Investigators randomly assigned more than 400 volunteers to get extracts of echinacea or placebo. One group started taking their liquid extracts 7 days before being exposed to rhinoviruses, the culprit behind many common colds. Another group received their extract or placebo at the same time the viruses were sprayed into the nostrils. In neither case did the echinacea provide any benefit. Patients were as likely to catch colds and suffer symptoms regardless of whether they took echinacea or dummy extracts. The investigators conclude that echinacea has no useful clinical effects on colds, and this is not the first study to show that echinacea is ineffective against the common cold. This is Joe Graydon and the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We are debating the war in Iraq. It is a debate often done on this show, but frankly, Americans are still dying there. Iraqis are still dying there. People are still being wounded there. And frankly, I don't know that we're any better off, at least in the United States, than we were under Saddam Hussein. I mean, I'm glad Saddam Hussein's gone. I have no sympathy for him. But in the meantime, we spent money in Iraq, and we've neglected the levies of New Orleans. In the meantime, we've taken troops out of Afghanistan who were searching for al-Qaeda, searching for Osama bin Laden, the murderer of 3,000 Americans, and put them in Iraq. In the meantime, North Korea developed nuclear weapons because we weren't focused on them, and Iran seems ready to thumb its nose at us because it knows we're overstretched. It knows that we can't do anything unless we have a draft because we're using all our military resources in Iraq. In Sudan, genocide continues. In Liberia, people are being killed and their children being forced as orphans into armies. We've got lots of problems around the world, and the question for my guest, who's debating with me, Fred Giedrich, is it worth the cost? Fred says yes. If you want to call in, 877-528-TALK. Fred, explain to me why Iraq is more important, say, than al-Qaeda.
Well, I think al-Zarqawi answers that question because al-Qaeda happens to be in Iraq right now, and that's who's carrying out a lot of these attacks against the civilian population, the poor Shiites who are finally, after being dominated by the Sunni minority for so many years, are in the majority now and going to have a representative government.
But Fred,
what we did.
Zarqawi was not in Iraq.
Let me finish my point,
yeah,
though.
Okay.
And I tried to make it earlier. If one looked at the Patterns of Global Terrorism report produced by the State Department, and that's basically, I would put it in, having served under two administrations, it's a bipartisan. We don't want to separate between Republicans and Democrats. And if you look at the ones prepared during the Clinton administration, it's an annual report. They listed five terrorist organizations out of 36 total around the world that were operating within Iraq. And at the time we intervened. Now, what I see is we had to do something because the Middle East, particularly the if you're just looking at the Arab world, the 21 countries plus the Palestinian Authority that comprise the Arab world, that's, according to Freedom House, the most least free group of nations in the world. And that happens to be exactly the part of the world where a lot of terrorism is being exported throughout Western Europe and into the United States, as we saw on 9/11. Now, what do we do about it? Is President Bush, how do we chase an Osama bin Laden whose al-Qaeda network operates in, like you said, 60, 70 countries?
Right. I'd say attack them where their bases are and not invite them into new countries where they never existed. Let me ask you this. Was Zarqawi operating out of Iraq when it was controlled by Saddam Hussein?
Yes, in the Kurdish area near the Iranian border.
He'd been there a couple times, but similar debate. Can you agree with me that Zarqawi is
trouble spot? Then what do we do about it? Now,
I say focus on the most troublesome, don't create more terrorists where none existed prior. I mean, Zarqawi's more powerful now in Iraq.
The jury's still out, and we got to be heartened by what happened on January 30th in Iraq, braving the terrorist threats, 8.5 million people going out and vote, and we seem to forget.
Yeah, as they did in Vietnam.
In a couple more weeks.
Yeah, as they did in Vietnam.
But here's what I say. If you have a free and democratic government in the heart of the terror region, you've got Iran.
Yeah, you know, and if you got a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, things get really happy too, but I see no evidence that that's happening. Let me ask you these questions, because you raise a lot of points. Would you agree with me that Zarqawi and terrorists and al-Qaeda are all more powerful in Iraq right now than they were when Saddam Hussein was in power?
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Really? You would say that al-Qaeda had a greater foothold under Saddam Hussein in Iraq than it does now?
I think what you had is a religious fanatic, Osama bin Laden, and you had a secular man, Saddam Hussein, who played it any way he wanted to play.
But
I do think what you find in the Middle East, and I've traveled there extensively, is this idea that enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Okay, but you're changing the subject. I just want an answer to my question.
Deals that are cut amongst terrorists, and that's how they slip in and out of
okay,
these countries.
But let me ask you this.
Now, how we do, what do we, I hear a lot of criticism coming out of the left, but what would we do better?
Well, Fred, I'm just trying to,
as opposed to carrying the fight to the terrorists.
I say we carry the fight to the terrorists rather than invite them to take over new countries and make them anarchy like Afghanistan. Saddam Hussein was a stable, weak, awful dictatorship. And what we did is we took out the head of it. And I think, well, hold on. Now you got to let me finish, Fred. Fred, now you got to let me finish. Fred, let me finish, and then I will give you a chance. Here's how I see it, okay? You never answered my question, and I would like to ask you again. Does Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups have a greater foothold in Iraq? Are they killing more Americans now that we've given them this country of Iraq that they didn't have before, than under Saddam Hussein? And I think that any analysis, if you simply look at the facts, would have to agree that people are killing more Americans in Iraq, that the terrorists have, whether it's Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda, have a greater foothold in Iraq now, after the loss of 1,900 American lives and tens of thousands of wounded, than they did before. They're actually stronger now, as unfortunately we see by the continuing greater attacks. Do you deny that?
Well, I think what we're seeing is a battle for the hearts and minds of the Iraqis. And I see an enemy, and these are the foreign jihadists coming in from countries like Iran, Syria, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia, and other countries in the Middle East and Near East. And
but most of the insurgents aren't foreign, are they?
They are, and they're not fighting by Geneva Convention rules by any stretch.
No, they're fighting for their homeland. They're fighting for their country. You can agree with me. The great majority of insurgents are from Iraq, right?
People who, if you believe in freedom and democracy, what the United States is tempting to do is to leave the place better than we
really
found it.
Let me ask you this.
And that's where the jury's out. And I think
I don't know that you can impose forcibly American freedom on a country that doesn't want it. Would you agree with me that the great majority of people attacking and killing Americans today are not from Jordan, they're not from Syria, they're not from Saudi Arabia, they are homegrown Iraqis who maybe didn't even like Saddam Hussein, but they certainly don't like United States occupation. Can you agree with me that most of the insurgents are Iraqis?
On that one, because what you have are the Sunni insurgents, particularly members of the Ba'ath Party, who are out of luck anymore. This minority is not going to dominate Iraq under the new government. And you have remnants of Saddam's regime who are launching a lot of these attacks, plus the foreign jihadists. And I think what we're witnessing...
But it's mostly Iraqi, right?
...in action. And when you see in the face of all these suicide bombings and...
Fred, are they mostly Iraqi?
These people are going to go to... vote in record number
right.
on their first constitution.
Right, and of course, right. and the people that voted
in December.
Yeah, they voted for a party that wanted us gone. I mean, Fred, do you agree with me? Let me just get just two facts, and I just want to know if you agree or disagree. Do you agree that there are more terrorists that have more power in Iraq now than they did under Saddam Hussein? One, and do you agree that most of the people that are attacking and killing Americans in Iraq are native-born Iraqi? Can I just get your answer? You know, I'm going to ask you those questions after the break, because we're coming up on a break. Those are my two questions for Fred Giedrich. Number one, are we safer now than we were before? Is Al-Qaeda stronger in Iraq now than it was under Saddam Hussein? And number two, who are the majority of people attacking us? Yeah, there's some foreigners there. I contend the great majority are Iraqi. If you want to call in and join this debate, you can, 877-528-TALK, or you can just let us go at it. Or you can comment on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. We'll be right back after this.
Do you sell dietary supplements? If so, you may know that the Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Trade Commission regulate your sales presentations. Violation of the federal rules can lead to stiff penalties. You really must know the law. Fortunately, help is just a phone call away. Law Talk Incorporated has produced a CD series, 4-CD interviews with renowned attorney Jonathan W. Emord that explain the legal limits on sales presentations. The CD series guides you through FDA and FTC regulation, explaining the law that governs sales presentations, website content, and health claims, as well as global restrictions on supplement sales. This is a must-buy for network marketers and supplement companies alike. To obtain the CD series, call 1-888-RU-FREE-1. 1-888-RU-FREE-1. RUFREE1. That's 1-888-783-7331. Call today.
Truckers keep America on the move, and lots of times it's chiropractors who keep truckers going. Here's a benefits card for truckers with discounts of 30 to 50% from a network of thousands of doctors of chiropractic in cities and towns all across America. This same card provides savings up to 60% from dentists at home and on the road. For $11.95 a month for individuals and $19.95 for your whole family, besides savings on chiropractors and dentists, there are similar savings on prescriptions and optical services at home and on the road. Got to get braces for the kids? Why not save 50%? This isn't insurance. These are instant savings with no paperwork to fill out. Truckers are important to us and the whole point of truckersbenefits.com. Get online now. Go to www.truckersbenefits.com for the whole story. If you're on the road, phone home and tell them to check out truckersbenefits.com from just $11.95 per month.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Today's Debate Tuesday. I'm debating my guest, Fred Giedrich, on the war in Iraq. He's formerly of the State and Defense Department. He's worked in all numbers of organizations. You can find it on my website at radioinsidescoop.com. He is currently Executive Vice President of MobileVox, which is a defense wireless technology contractor. Fred, before the break, I asked you some questions, and I know that you'll want to explain your answers, and I want to hear your explanation, but I wonder if I could just get some quick yes or no answers to three questions I have, and I'll pose each of them to you.
Okay.
The first is, do you or do you not believe that terrorists in Iraq, and specifically Al-Qaeda, are more powerful in Iraq now than they were when Saddam Hussein was in power in 2001? Yes or no? You think they're more powerful, less powerful, about the same?
Well, Saddam Hussein was a terrorist, so I would have to say it's about the same if you're looking at it from the perspective of the Iraqi
people. Okay, so maybe Al-Qaeda's greater and other terrorists are greater, yeah, but Saddam Hussein is less and it balances out. Is that your view? Okay.
Yeah.
Number two, do you believe that most of the people in Iraq that are attacking U.S. troops, killing Americans and Iraqis with some of these brutal terrorist attacks, do you think that most of these people and their support come from inside Iraq or outside Iraq?
I think if you're looking at just the numbers, you will see Al-Zarqawi, who is Osama bin Laden's lieutenant in Iraq, is from Jordan, has several thousand loyal supporters wreaking havoc on coalition forces and even more havoc on the Iraqi people. And in fact,
he's the majority of the insurgency.
He's declared war on the Shiites.
And he's the majority. Most of the insurgents work for Zarqawi. Is that your position?
No, I'm saying most of the foreign terrorists are under his umbrella.
Okay. And are most of the terrorists foreign or domestic? Most of the people attack the United States.
I would have to just agree with you that most of the attacks against coalition forces are emanated from forces, Iraqi insurgents.
Okay.
Now, I have to add on to that point. If you look at where the majority of those attacks coming from, and I would say 95% is from a portion of the Sunni population.
Sure.
Now,
the Sunni Iraqis. Right.
The population, how it's dispersed in Iraq. You have 20% Sunni.
Yep.
You have 20% Kurds.
Sure.
And you got 60% Shiite.
Sure.
The Kurds and the Shiites, 80% of the population, were oppressed by Saddam Hussein.
Absolutely.
They were ruled by the 20%.
I don't dispute any of that.
Out of the 20%, I would say about 5% are hardcore Saddam loyalists, Sunnis. And that's a substantial number.
And my view, by the way, is that let them fight their civil war. Let's leave. And if they want to split the country among Kurdistan in the north, Sunni land in the middle, and Shiite land in the south, let them be, let them have their self-determination. At least Americans won't be dead, and they can go on with their lives. Let me ask you the third question, and then I'm going to let you pose three questions to me. I'll be fair. You can pose three yes or no questions to me. I'll even give you the break to think about it if you want.
Okay.
The third question I have for you is, it was Saddam Hussein in 2001-2002 10 times more important than Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and therefore worthy of the 10 times more troops and 10 times more resources we put in fighting Iraq instead of fighting Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda in their havens in Pakistan and Afghanistan, was Saddam Hussein 10 times more dangerous than al-Qaeda, equal in danger to al-Qaeda, or less danger in al-Qaeda to America?
I wouldn't put a number on it. I would say, classify him as dangerous, but I would also say that the first intervention we made in the global war on terror was going into Afghanistan and quickly,
which I completely supported,
moving out the Taliban regime,
which I completely supported,
which wasn't even accepted by the United Nations, for crying out loud, and also sent the Al-Qaeda network running. A lot of them are in Pakistan, some
actually United Nations
border in Iran, but I think
I'm not so sure they didn't accept us in Afghanistan. As I recall, there was a resolution. I think even Syria abstained. I think there was a resolution supporting us in Afghanistan, as my memory serves. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think it was I'm not sure it if it was 15. Or
I think it was unanimous, and Syria abstained with our war in Afghanistan. So I think UN actually did support us in Afghanistan, but not in Iraq. Let me raise another issue with you. You talked about the fact that in the Arab world, some 21 countries and the Palestinian Authority, and you talked about how terrorism is prevalent in the Arab world. Isn't it true, Mr. Giedrich, that in virtually every single one of those 21 countries and the Palestinian Authority support terrorism? I mean, almost to a one. Maybe Morocco doesn't, but let's say more than half support terrorism. Is that fair to say?
I
can give you names if you want.
Sponsors of terror. That's what you'd have to look.
Saudi Arabia, yes.
You're looking at Sudan. Libya has certainly since we intervened in Iraq.
Let's take a note.
Off their weapons of mass destruction.
Right. Well, let's mark them down. Libya, you agree?
Libya is a
Syria. You agree?
For quite a few years, they're
Syria
still on the list. You got the Sudan in
Sudan, absolutely. Algeria.
Our program to talk about all the problems there, the genocide that's occurring.
So let's just make a checklist if we can. Libya, yes.
Okay, you got Syria.
Syria, Sudan, Saudi Arabia. You agree?
And then you got Lebanon.
Lebanon, absolutely.
The domination of
And Algeria.
I spent some time in Beirut, and when one looks at what the warring factions did to that city, it was just heartbreaking.
Yeah, Fred, we're running out of time, so I want to get to the three questions you're going to give me in the break, but let me just do just a checklist if I can. Just say if you agree with me that these countries support terrorism. We mentioned Lebanon, Libya, Syria, and Sudan. You agree on all of those, right?
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia, you agree?
Not, I'd add Saudi Arabia to
that. I would, too. How about Algeria?
Algeria, I would those countries we just listed, I would separate than the other ones.
Well, Algeria viciously murdered tens of thousands of its citizens in a civil war about 10 years ago and wouldn't allow the press to even cover it. I think that counts as a terrorist nation. And I don't want to exclude Pakistan.
No,
which
I'm
helped
just talking about the nations that have appeared prominently on the State Department's patterns of global terrorism.
Right, but they're not the only ones. I mean, there's and the Palestinians, certainly.
Look at Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe.
Absolutely, and then there's Liberia.
We could go on and on.
Right.
In fact, if you want to go look at the entire United Nations membership, you'll find out the vast majority of countries are not free and democratic.
So, Fred, here's my problem. Here's the heart of my problem, and then after the break, I'll let you ask me your questions. The heart of my problem is this. With all these countries around the world supporting terrorism, and frankly, I think many countries would count the United States in that, given how we supported the Contras and some Guatemalan death squads and so forth in Central America. Terrorism is widely supported around the world, given all these countries and all these unfree nations all around the world. Either we have to do as we did with Iraq and try to conquer them all and put freedom in all of them, and we're going to need a massive draft to do that of probably every able-bodied male in the United States, or we have to set priorities. And my contention has always been that Saddam Hussein, bad as he was not our top priority. But I'll give you a chance to ask me questions after the break.
What some people are saying about your morning with Jim Harrington and friends.
Wake up, Doc. You do, of course, realize you're listening to Your Morning with Jim Harrington and friends. I like him better than carrots. You know, you stinker.
Your Morning with Jim Harrington and friends. Monday through Friday, right here. The perfect program for the discriminating rabbit.
A listen 6 to 10 Eastern Time on the Talkstar Radio Network. The legacy of the great communicator lives on in his accomplishments and his spoken word. And now you can own a treasury of the great speeches of Ronald Wilson Reagan on DVD. We're offering 12 memorable speeches from Ronald Reagan's remarkable presidency, starting with his nomination speech all the way to his farewell to the nation in 1988. Included is his memorable speech at the Berlin Wall.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
This DVD collection in full color is the best way to remember Ronald Reagan and share his wit, charm, and the clarity of his challenge to all Americans. Order the stirring collection of Reagan speeches for just $19.95 plus shipping and handling. Go to www.reagancollection.com.
Order online or by mail at the address ReaganCollection.com.
So, Kristen, how was Esther's baby shower?
Oh, great.
Yeah?
You know it's a girl, right?
Oh, wow. What's her name?
It's one of those names.
Excuse me?
You know, one of those names. Shakita, Juanita, Jaquita. Why do black people like those kinds of names anyway? They just make it harder on themselves, you know what I mean?
No, Kristen. I don't know what you mean.
Imagine the power of one voice. Find your voice at freedomcenter.org. A message from the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We only have a few minutes left. I've been quite tough on at least the views of my guest today, Fred Giedrich, who supports the war in Iraq. I asked him some tough questions and demanded that he actually answer them, and to his credit, he did, and we may disagree on where the facts lead us, but at least we agree on the facts. That is, that there are more domestic insurgents in Iraq than foreign ones, and that al-Qaeda, at least, is more powerful today in Iraq than it was under Saddam Hussein. But I did promise I would give Fred the chance to ask me some tough questions. So, Fred, I don't know if you prepared some in the break. If you have, bring it on.
Sure. First and foremost, do you think Clinton administration counterterrorism policies needed to be changed after 9/11? And that's basically a situation where they thought it could be handled via the law enforcement as opposed to militarily.
I disagree with your characterization of the Clinton administration. I think to some extent, yes, but I think to a large extent they did really well, and I like Richard Clark's plan to invade Afghanistan that Bush unfortunately shelved before 9/11. That's my quick answer. You got another question for me, or should we deal with this?
Do you think we ever should act preemptively against terror states or
networks? I do. If we have strong, and I mean absolute rock-solid, strong, no-question intelligence, that a rogue nation is about to develop nuclear weapons, as, for example, Israel did with the Osirik nuclear plant in Iraq, I would support preemptively taking out that plant, not necessarily going to war, but in order to stop a rogue state from getting nuclear weapons, yes, actually, I do support that. And I've argued, in fact, for precisely that strategy against Kim Jong-il in North Korea, which makes me more aggressive, I guess, than the Bush administration in some instances. But only in that instance. Oh, one more thing. Another preemptive strike I would support in cases of genocide. I would support us invading Sudan right now.
And finally, the third one.
Yes.
The U.N., in its most recent world summit, just concluded, I believe, again failed after 40 years of trying to come up with a definition of terrorism. If they can't find it in itself, apparently, to identify terrorism as the wanton killing of innocent men, women, and children for political gain.
Yeah.
In view of that indisputable fact,
yeah,
do you have faith in the U.N., protect U.S. national security?
I have never had faith in the United Nations to protect U.S. national security. As far as I'm concerned, the United Nations is a tool. It's not a world government, never has been. There's just too many dictators involved. But it is a tool and can be a useful tool. We can use it to protect American interests, as we did in Korea, as we did with George Bush Sr. in the Persian Gulf War. It is a useful tool, one we shouldn't leave out of our toolbox. But no, I would never leave the United Nations to determine U.S. national security. Are you surprised by my three answers to your questions, Fred?
No.
Okay, well, good.
And I think as Americans, it's important to get these issues out on the table, debate them as best we can, and to consider the opinions of each other. And I think that's what the United States is all about. And
I certainly do as well, Fred. I guess my problem is this. You've said, as the administration has said, that time will tell. In other words, if we just sit out in Iraq long enough, then in the future we'll know. I don't know if there's 5 years or 10 years or 25 years. Eventually we'll know whether this was a good deal. Here's my question for you, and we only have a few seconds left. When, if it doesn't improve in Iraq, if 5 years from now, let's just throw that number out, we are in the same situation, American lives are still being lost, there's still anarchy on the ground, then would you give it up or would you try 10 years, 15 years? When would you say that we should leave or do you think that, for example, we never should have left Vietnam?
Vietnam is long.
Okay, let's deal with Iraq first. All right. How many years before we give up and go home?
I do think that I look at it positively, and I think in the near term, within the next 5 years, what we're going to see is freedom and democracy.
And if we don't see it in 5 years, do we leave?
We may not emulate what we have here in the United States.
I understand. Fred, 5 seconds, Fred. If we don't see it in 5 years, do we leave?
Did we leave Germany and Japan?
I guess the answer is no. For me, you'd still be fighting in Vietnam. I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Thank you very much for your time, Fred. We'll be right back tomorrow with a debate on the Pledge of Allegiance.
Big Brothers Big Sisters presents 100 Years of Helping Kids.
Today, Kyle and his big brother, Justin.
Hello.
Hi.
Are here to share some stuff we've learned.
With kids, it's not always what you say, but how you say it.
Hey, Kyle, you want to go to a foreign film festival?
Hey, Kyle, you want to go to a foreign film festival?
Yeah.